As we have a look this morning at one of those things that can affect many of us in the community, IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, and there's some interesting research findings out very recently about perhaps how that will be treated in the future. Talking with us about that this morning, Professor at the University of Newcastle, it is Professor Nick Talley. Good morning, Nick. Let's start more broadly by saying IBS, how does that affect those who suffer with it?
So look, IBS is really, really common actually. About one in six Australians have this problem, so really common. And it can affect children, it can affect people in middle age, it can affect people even in old age. So it's a very common problem. And what it does is that the intestines just don't work quite properly. And people get abdominal pain, they can often feel bloated and swollen, and their bowels don't work properly. They get diarrhea or constipation or sometimes a mix of both. And this combination of symptoms, they're really characteristic of IBS.
Nick, is it something that if you don't know that you've got it, you will be having these symptoms fairly constantly, or would it come and go?
It tends to come and go, so it can follow a sort of an acute infection sometimes, or antibiotics, or things like this. Then you'll get the symptoms, and they'll come and go, and you might even see a doctor or two who doesn't know what's going on. So it can be confusing, at least initially, for some people. But IBS, typically, once you've got it, unfortunately, in very many cases, it stays with you for many, many years. So it's a long-standing problem that comes and goes.
Now, with the research that's been happening at the moment that's just happened, what were some of the findings of that? Have obviously got some new ways to treat it, perhaps?
So what we found is IBS isn't one disease, but many diseases. And we've identified a number of different causes now. And we've also started to realize that some people with IBS, the gut is the problem. The gut goes wrong, and then the rest of the symptoms, including things like anxiety, which are related to IBS, they go wrong too. And in other people, it can be a response to stress and anxiety directly. So it can be either way, and the symptoms that end up are very similar. So that's really been interesting. But we found, for example, we've identified, we think, a chronic infection that can lead to IBS. We've identified a gene that can be linked to IBS, and which is an important thing because we can reverse it with drugs potentially. So there are going to be new ways, we believe, to treat this, although we've got a little way to go to sort it all out. It's not solved yet by any means.
So it seems like there are a whole lot of factors that can come into play there. I want to just pick up on the anxiety and stress though, Nick. Would it potentially help if, knowing that they are factors, if we can lower those aspects of our lives, we potentially may lower the IBS?
I have no doubt about that. So certainly, you know, if people have IBS, and there are many other conditions like this, lowering your stress levels, reducing your anxiety, they can be really helpful features. Changing your diet, which changes the microbes in your gut, that can be very helpful. And also exercise. There's some evidence that if you exercise regularly, you can help it as well. So those simple things can make a real difference to people.
So the stress and anxiety, we can kind of work on that. Exercise, pretty simple to turn that around. Diet factors, what would be some of the things that would spike it, and what were some of the things we should be adding in?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's complicated, unfortunately.
There are a number of
there are a number of foods that when they get into the bowel, into the gut, the microbes break them down and release gas. And the foods that we need to sort of remove from the diet are the foods that are stimulating that gas production. That's the simple approach. So there's a particular diet that was developed in Melbourne called the low FODMAP. F-O-D-M-A-P, FODMAP diet. And that actually, there's pretty good evidence now, that helps a number of people with IBS. The problem with the low FODMAP diet is it's quite complex, and it's a number of different foods, and that's where it gets complex. Some people otherwise, with constipation and IBS, they can respond to fiber, to increase fiber. Other people, though, with IBS, if you give them fiber, they get worse. So it's a little bit complicated.
Yeah,
so sometimes seeing a dietitian can be very helpful in that setting.
Maneuvering a lot of levers up and down. Just very quickly before I let you go, Nick, if you don't actually go down the path of treating it, are there other long-term health implications for IBS?
No, the good news is IBS does not cause any long-term problems. It causes symptoms, it can impact quality of life and work productivity, but it doesn't lead to an increased death rate, for example. We know that for sure. So that's the really good news. And in fact, we did some studies a few years ago which suggested you may even live a few days longer if you have IBS. I mean a few days.
It'll make all the difference. Nick, very interesting to talk to you about that this morning. A lot of diet and lifestyle factors, as can be the case, and we'll keep an eye on that with interest. Thank you for your time with us.
Thank you so much.
Some interesting thoughts there about IBS. Where do you start on that one? Thank you for Professor Nick Talley for talking with us about that this morning. 2NURFM, it's 25 past 9.